Now, let's move on to our next speaker, Dr. Murray Vincent. He is a professor of health promotion and education in the School of Public Health at the University of South Carolina. He's the developer of another rigorously evaluated teenage pregnancy prevention program. External evaluations have documented a 50% reduction in teen pregnancies in the county that had the program compared with counties that did not have the program. His study has been published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. The results have been confirmed by a private research group. Now, Dr. Vincent uses a different approach that focuses more on the whole community. His program was funded from 1982 to 1994. The first 5 years, it was funded by the Office of Adolescent Pregnancy Programs, the United States Public Health Service, and then also by the South Carolina Health and Human Services Finance Commission for the last 7 years of the project. He's published more than 50 articles in professional journals. Only in my dreams, Dr. Vincent, 50 articles. He's received numerous honors for his teaching and scholarship. His program's been recognized by the United States Department of Health and Human Services and the American Medical Association. It's currently being replicated in Kansas. Now, he's going to discuss his program, suggest implications from his experience in South Carolina. Our job is to be thinking about these implications, which might be appropriate for Wisconsin, probably even more importantly, which might be appropriate for the communities or neighborhoods that we live in. It's really a pleasure for me to introduce to you Dr. Murray Vincent. Let's welcome him.
Actually, Karen, it's very simple. You just get older, and then they're easy to add up. I've been really fortunate that Dr. Bogenschneider pointed out to you that we had a project that functioned in one county, Bamberg County, from 1982 to 1994, and another county in South Carolina for 3 years. And now we're in the third year of a replication initiative out in Kansas, in Geary County, which is Fort Riley, Franklin County, which is over near Ottawa on the eastern side of the state, and then in inner city Wichita. So this is an exciting venture that I'm really glad to be in. I think that there are a couple things that come to mind. I agree with practically everything that Marion Howard says. She says such wonderful things and such a wonderful program here. Let me add some more things on there. We're sex educated. We're sexual creatures from birth until we die. Sex education begins at birth, probably prior to birth, in terms of the expectations of mom and dad and so forth. It's kind of a silly question of whether we will or will not have sex education, because it's everywhere around us, by watching mom and dad, by watching television, and everything that we see and do. So there's powerful sex education, and the question is whether we're willing to put something in, of a formal nature in the organizations in our society. Dr. Howard was talking about a curriculum, and she's talking about the particular methods that you would use in the carrying out and the implementation of that curriculum. I will speak beyond that a little bit and saying that all that she talks about is, in fact, in some of our projects, but I would say, in my opinion, it's a matter of dosage level. I think that we have to have a bigger bang here. And so I see teen pregnancy, as I'm sure most of you, and Dr. Howard also, it's a very complex sociocultural problem. It's not just a problem of the potentially pregnant teen female or her impregnator, this not boy, probably male, who is 20 to 29 years of age. It's a problem of the parents of both of those youngsters. It's a problem of the business community because of cost shifting and other things that go on as far as the medical care system that we have. It's a problem of physicians. It's a problem of public health clinics. It's a problem of the churches and the religious organizations. In other words, it's a community problem. And the only way you're going to deal with a huge, complex sociocultural problem like this, I think, is to mobilize the entire community. The community has to come to recognize that they do have a problem, recognize that it's their responsibility to solve the problem, and they have to mobilize their own resources to solve it. And so I don't think we'll make much progress, and I don't think there's any magic bullets out there that will do the trick. And so that's the way I see the problem. Let's go on to the next one, please. The hypothesis in this project, it was very simple. In other words, the more you do, the greater opportunities and possibilities that you're going to reduce teen pregnancy. I also, as Dr. Howard spoke of Al McAllister, really the impetus for the sort of the theory and the approach in the project came from the cardiovascular risk reduction projects that were done a few years ago, the Stanford studies, the North Korea studies, the Minnesota Heart Health Program, and other programs where they have multiples of interventions directed to different targeted groups in the community. Whether it's working with the butcher shop owners, working in the schools, working with the churches, etc. And that's sort of the same approach here. We have to have multiple targeted groups in the community in which you have high dosage of intervention, continuous, sequential, keep the pot boiling, keep the waters muddy, so people constantly are under the gun in terms of understanding that teen pregnancy is a serious problem, it's our problem, and there are ways to resolve that to some degree. Next, please. In our projects, that was the outcome objective, that we wanted to reduce the incidence of pregnancies among teenagers 14 to 17 years of age. In our state, they break the numbers down, I think, rather nicely. I was listening to the comments about, you look at 15 to 19, I guess conceptually I see an 18 and 19-year-old female as a little different than 14 to 17-year-old. And so I like the way we break it down. But our purpose was to reduce pregnancies among the 14 to 17-year-olds in our state, which is the way our state reports it. We were promoting abstinence significantly in our programs. Through our various programs, we want to delay the onset of first intercourse. Those of you who are in this arena know that if you can delay the onset of first intercourse from 14.5 to 15.5, all your other public health statistics will get better. All of your other statistics will get better in terms of the completion of high school diplomas, etc. So it's a very wise and excellent and prudent thing to do to try to delay first intercourse. Of course, in our state, probably like your state, we have many, many youngsters who are sexually active. If you look at the youth risk behavioral study, which I commented upon a while ago, if you take the national sample as well as looking at the data that come in from different states, you'll find that 7 out of 10 high school boys will be sexually active, having intercourse at least once, and slightly over 50% of the females will be sexually active at least once. So for those boys and girls who are sexually active, then they need to be responsible and effective contraceptors. Next, please. Hope you can see that in the back. I think it's large enough. Really, what we've done in South Carolina and now in our three sites in Kansas is not unique or exotic or different. It's basically public health. So in other words, we have money. You have to have money. Okay, this can't be something that's tacked on to another program. I think of things that are going on in schools where you're already overworked, and so they say, well, now, in addition to being in charge of the buses, in addition to being in charge of the AIDS program or whatever, you're going to take this on. And that dies very, very quickly. You have to have money. So in other words, from the University of South Carolina, and with federal dollars coming in, most recently we were funded through Medicaid, we had our dollars, we had a commitment from the community, and then we were able to put in place a director, a field director, a clerical assistant, and then some part-time workers. So in other words, that's basically the staff that we've had located in our two sites in South Carolina, our two counties, and then also in our Kansas areas. So in other words, we have people who have the ownership of responsibility to make things happen in a community. Now, three people and some part-timers can't do all the programs that need to be done in the community, obviously, right? So it's a matter of networking, collaborating, initiating, and I like to use the word orchestrate. Your job is to orchestrate and make things happen within the schools, within the youth organizations, whether it's 4-H Club or whatever, within all the religious organizations, the social service agencies, businesses, the physicians, public health people, the media, and also with parents. So in other words, we have all these constituencies out there, and your job is to network and make things happen. Okay? If you look at schools, I would say without a doubt, in our project, in our Kansas project, when we sent out the request for proposals, we demanded certain agreements on the part of community power brokers. And the school people have to be a big part of this. Children are in school from ages 5 or 4 to 18 years of age. That's a huge part of the of the public there. And certainly it's a major public health problem. So we ask schools to commit themselves to become involved. So obviously schools have a significant impact upon the education of parents, the impact upon school boards, certainly the teachers and staff and the community volunteers, and then ultimately the students. In our project through the University of South Carolina Regional Studies Program, we can take a graduate course anywhere in the state, actually anywhere in the nation, if they can guarantee a certain number of students, and it's a very, very, very low rate. So we had significant graduate education for teachers. We have continuing education for teachers. We have newsletters. We have bulletin boards. We had the peer leaders, as Dr. Howard described. We had full-fledged K through 12 curriculum, sequential age-appropriate curricular options along the way, and special events or anything that we could do, as I said, to keep that pot boiling within the school setting, because to me that they have to become involved. Next, please. I just said that, so you don't need to look at that. But then the other part of this is that our staff people, our coordinators in the counties, must work very, very hard to network and collaborate, to be on boards, to involve and be involved in interagency organizations, to work and initiate and make things happen, whether it's making things happen to do continuing education kinds of programs for Sunday school teachers, working with particular churches, helping them incorporate maybe an abstinence-only emphasis in their church, whether it's working with the health department to try to change policies as far as clinic hours, whether it's working for transportation to and from clinics, whether it's working with physicians, and certainly working with the media to make people constantly become aware that this is a problem that affects the public health of the members of the community. So we do a lot in the community as much as we possibly can. Next, please. We had wonderful results, and that's the reason why I guess we were published in the Journal of American Medical Association, and I will say that the Research Triangle Institute people from Chapel Hill came in and did a secondary evaluation and confirmed our results. Probably few programs around the country ever have a secondary evaluation. We were fortunate to have that. We started in 82. These are pregnancy rates. In other words, as the gentleman mentioned a moment ago, live births, abortions, and fetal deaths based on the number of teens, 14 to 17 years of age. And the rate before, if you look, obviously the high numbers in 81 and 82, which previous to that were just as high, in Bamberg County, we started in October of 1982, obviously had nothing of any consequence in 83, and then in 84, 85, and 86, and actually even 87 and 88 is not too bad. We were well below the state mean. We had one blip, as you can see, in 1991, and certainly the demographers, statisticians will tell us that with small numbers, you're going to have blips like that now and then. But anyway, if you do running three-year averages, for example, you can smooth that out. Obviously, we were worse than the state prior to the intervention, and we've done considerably better. As a matter of fact, I'm proud to say in 1993, that county had the lowest teen pregnancy rate in the state of South Carolina for 14 to 17-year-olds. So something happened in the community. I think, indeed, although this is probably a politically incorrect thing to say, I think you have to try to change the culture. The culture being that, you know, it's okay to have a child at a very early age, or it's okay to have intercourse at a very early age, or it's okay to have unprotected sex. That has to be changed to the point where you do indeed change the culture. I have some implications. Let me run through quickly. You have these in the back of your folder. Dr. Bogenschneider and Kirsten, you did a wonderful job on that outline. That's really good. I commend you for that. I think as you look at these things, and I'm really pleased to see the legislators here and their assistants and so forth, let me just rephrase my thinking and what I've learned over the years. It's a complex sociocultural problem, and you have to recognize that there is a problem that you're going to solve it. Otherwise, I'm not very optimistic. People have to publicly commit to resolving teen pregnancy. And I will say this, in my experience in our two counties, there's tremendous pressure on that school superintendent. There's tremendous pressure on that superintendent who has to deal with people who have rather extreme views. And so this is not a small matter to get people to make a public commitment to involving themselves in a teen pregnancy prevention program. Next, please. I said this a moment ago. I think if we're seriously going to deal with this, you have to have multiple interventions of a high dosage level directed to all members of the community, whether that's children, adolescents, mom and dad, teachers, parents, agency professionals, whether it's public health, physicians, business and industry. In other words, the whole kit and caboodle have to be involved to some degree in your efforts. People say, well, we don't have that much money to do this project. What would you do, or what works best? I can't answer the attribution question, because that would take a very, very large research study and to answer sort of that impossible question. But I think the synergy of all that does indeed change the community. If you were to ask me for my opinion, I would say you get a big bang for your bucks by preparing teachers, because teachers are also Sunday school teachers. They're also Boy and Girl Scout leaders. They're also involved in the community. They have their own kids. I think that's really a big bang for your bucks. Next, please. K through 12 sexuality education, which I don't know the status here in the state of Wisconsin, but I think there needs to be tremendous emphasis upon that. You have youngsters in there from age 5 to 18, and so that needs to be age-appropriate, sequential, and of high dosage level. You don't want your child learning mathematics, do you, on weekends, or maybe on 1 week in the fourth grade and one week in the seventh grade? Think how nonsensical that is. Also, the last point, which probably seems really silly to you, but do you realize that in my area, I'm a health educator, how many people teach health education or teach sexuality education and they have no formal background or training in that area? It's an insult to what I do. And I think that you have many, many fine home economics teachers who are trained. You have some health educators who are trained. You have some excellent school nurses who do a great job in this area, and I'm probably leaving out in the other areas, sociology, psychology, etc. But for the most part, many of our teachers haven't had any kind of formal preparation in sexuality. And if they're going to teach my child, I would hope that they would have significant coursework. Next, please. Here's another point that I think that, you know, what is sexuality education? What is teen pregnancy prevention? Please include in your thinking the idea that when I talk about jobs, the future, job placement, all of these kinds of things, that's really a part of teen pregnancy prevention. People who aspire, who want to do things, who have hope, who have vision, are better contraceptors, for example. They're probably more apt to get an abortion also. So there are a number of things in the job arena and the capacity building area that I would hope that you would think of as teen pregnancy prevention. Next, please. There needs to be, in my opinion, based on my experience, and I think what most people say, you need to have availability and access to the programs that provide contraception, pregnancy testing, adoption, and abortion. Those should be accessible to the youth in your community without many barriers to get to that point. Next, please. Dr. Bogenschneider asked me to talk about our project. Our projects, we fund them in Kansas at $150,000 a year in a community. And we were in two rural counties in South Carolina. We're in one rural county, one county in Kansas, which has a military base in inner city Wichita. I think that it would be rather ludicrous to think of you have a program for Milwaukee. Obviously, there are different communities in Milwaukee or in Madison. So when I think of community at $150,000, some distinct community, perhaps I'm just pulling this out of the air, maybe with 20 to 50,000 people in that particular community. But you have to put money in this if you are really serious in making an impact. Next, please. My time is about out. Another thing I would urge you, I know that everyone would like to have the return and the next quarterly report, but in reality, it doesn't work that way, and so you need to, if you're going to prevent things, you need to give it time to work. If you're going to impact upon that particular culture, that particular community, then allow time for change, because the impact of knowledge gain, attitude shifts, and behavioral change, it's not going to show up. Your vital statistics data won't be around. They're always a year and a half or 2 years behind anyway. So give yourself time to see gains. Okay, next. Maybe that's about the last one. Well, involve your universities. In our projects in Kansas, we have a wonderful arrangement where the University of Kansas people work with me to provide technical assistance and program evaluation. So that's what my program is all about. I don't know that it's a panacea for everything. I don't make any claim that it is. There are a lot of things that we do well. If I had to do it over, we'd do some things better. But I think that there are components that might be fitting for your community and in this state of Wisconsin. So thank you very much.
Any questions?
The question is, you get tremendous criticism when you teach anything other than abstinence. And, of course, in Columbia, we had a rather large group. It was like a rogues gallery of people who are very much against this, and they came in. And, their message, you can't have a mixed message. I don't buy that at all. And I think good sex educators around all over the country have been teaching promoting abstinence as well as promoting responsibility for those who are sexually active. I don't know that there's any evidence at all to support that viewpoint. The other thing of it too, I would hope that you promote abstinence and you promote delay of first intercourse. I think we still want our youngsters to learn about growth and developmental changes, about fertility, about reproductive responsibility that will carry them into marriage or at some point in their adult life too. But it's a problem. It's definitely one that you will face in every community. And I don't think there's any evidence to support that. When I walked in, there was a slide there's an overhead which illustrated the acceptance of Wisconsin people regarding sex education. Birth control was 85%. And I came in and I said, you know what? Same stuff we get in South Carolina. I've done 5 scientific studies of parent and guardians of youngsters in school regarding their whether they're in favor or against these different sex ed topics. You get 9 out of 10 who are accepting. And I said to Dr. Bogenschneider, even in the 2 areas, homosexuality as well as masturbation, you're going to get 2 out of 3 parents who want their kids to learn about this in school. Yes, I'm in favor. So I would say I think there are parents who are not as archaic as what some people might make them out to be. I wouldn't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, so I probably wouldn't have a sex ed program with a content area of masturbation, because I think it probably would cause so much ire and so much anger among the citizens that I wouldn't do that. I would certainly want my teachers, though, to teach in school about how God gave us good bodies. It's full of nerve receptors. What you do in private is okay. And I would try to promote the goodness. I would do that in Sunday school class also, that it's a good body, it's made well, and it feels good, and there's private and public behavior. Did I skirt all around your question? When I talk about dosage, we did everything we could with the churches that would ask us to come work with them. The black churches worked with us a lot. They loved us. The white churches didn't work with us so much. So when I say dosage, you have to do as much as you can. If I'm going to be a wellness worksite coordinator out here at a DuPont plant or whatever, the more you initiate in terms of awareness, the greater likelihood that things will happen. That's what my hypothesis. The more you do, the more likely. And so you do as much as you can, as much as physically you're capable of doing. Is that make any sense? Okay.